Well, we were married on the 26th of June and moved back to an apartment in Dearborn and drove to Willow Run, continued to drive to Willow Run, continued to work these long hours. Mm-hmm. Well, early in 1945, they got production of the bomber up to 1 hour, which was tremendous,
mm-hmm.
or something of that size and that nature. But of course, and they were working on this single tail version, and of course we kept having these major changes of various items. Mm-hmm. And when Germany surrendered, of course, everything more or less stopped, and people were being transferred back to the areas they came from or to other areas. And so I had made, again, several drawings, and I was transferred back to design and wanting to go on the board. Well, again, they needed people that could model. Mm-hmm. And so I was asked if I would go into modeling, and so I did. And so I worked on some major developments. I worked on the scale model of the Ford truck, which came out in 48, and I developed the scale model of the regular cab and the cab over, and the sheet metal portion, not the cab. The cab had been developed really by engineering. And as I had shown you those photographs, the design was blown up and was very, very close to the scale model. You can look at the photograph, the scale model, as I had shown you,
mm-hmm.
and the photograph of the ones that came into production, and you know, they're very, very close.
Mm-hmm.
I also...
Who was running the truck design?
Truck design.
At that time, right after the war.
The fellow that was in charge of that wasn't there very long, and I really don't remember his name.
Mm-hmm.
I've wondered myself. also did the model of the first... post-war Ford bus. Ford built a bus at that time, or had a bus built and sold a bus with their name. And I think it was built by, built down in Indiana. But I did also that model. It was a very nice little model. I think it was 10th scale.
Mm-hmm.
Then I worked with John Major. Well, I did some work on the Lincoln, the what became the Cosmopolitan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked with John Major on the interiors, instrument panel and steering wheel of the Continental, Cosmopolitan.
Yeah. That was the post-war Lincoln, wasn't it?
That was the post-war Lincoln, mm-hmm. the large one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in August, I was called back for another physical. And I had my physical that time in Columbus, and on the way back, the bus stopped somewhere along the way, and we got the news that some of these things happened are somewhat dramatic.
Still traumatic, even at this point, huh?
It was the day they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima.
Right, yeah.
So, of course, the war ended, and I got my call for induction, and as they wanted to get me, keep me from going in service at that time, I didn't, I suppose I could have pursued it, but I didn't. And. I've always felt that God has had his hand on me. If I had been inducted, I don't think I would have lived.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't object to it. And I felt that, I'd do my bit as I was able. Well, of course, by that time we were married and we were living in here in Dearborn. My wife was working. And so I went down to Columbus and was actually inducted at Columbus in Fort Benjamin Harrison, I think. And from there, we went to Camp Atterbury. And of course, by that time, this was into 45, so I was 24 years old, and everybody else was 18. So I was the oldest one. So they gave me the papers to carry down, and I was responsible for taking the people in. Well, we got into Camp Atterbury in Indiana, south of Indianapolis, about 50 miles or 30 miles, I guess. And we got there in the evening, and we had supper. And we went to a barracks, and they started a series of talks by various people. Of course, I was a draftee, and they wanted everyone to enlist. Mm-hmm. And of course, they got a big group of people that enlisted the first time around. The next time around, they got a few more. The next time, they got a few more. The time went on and on. Well, one of the fellows that had been in the group that I was in, coming from Columbus. His father was, I believe, a senator, at least a representative. I think he was a senator at the time. And he told his son, whatever you do, don't enlist. Mm-hmm. Well, eventually he enlisted.
Oh, really? Never that perspective.
So I got up to about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I think there was maybe, eight of us, six or seven, eight.
They were holding out.
They finally gave up. So we took our tests there and got our shots and our uniforms and all of this bit, you know. And then my name was listed to go to Fort or Field Artillery training in Missouri, Camp. Well, anyway. So I was going to go in about 3 days. And before that happened, I was called out and with a group of, I think, six others. And we were called into a little fire station. And they said we were going to go to Fort Knox. So to get all of our things together and meet there at 6 o'clock, something, you know, the next morning.
Oh, 600.
And which we did. And they put us on a truck and took us into town and put us on a train. And we went down to Louisville. And we got a big 4x4 and took us out to Fort Knox. And we got there and they took us into a big barracks and had a special supper ready for us and a nice bed and everything sort of first class. And the next day they interviewed us and they needed people. They had a separation center. They needed people to work in the separation center. So I took a training course and became a counselor, what they called a separation counselor for the Army. And this was a task where we were interviewing fellows coming back from service and found out what their military job was and wrote up a description of that. Of course, it had a number, and also what their civilian job had been, if they had had a job, and wrote up a description of that and a number for that, and made sure they had their decorations and tried to sell them insurance if they didn't have any, and all of these things, all of the final things that they would need to have done before they were separated.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this was a wild thing. We'd have a little booth, and these fellows had come back from, principally at that time, from Europe,
mm-hmm.
and been in service and had all these decorations and enlisted personnel, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a tremendous place, and their exuberance, you know, they mm-hmm. couldn't wait to get out the door.
Yeah.
You'd have to hold them.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for about a month. And so I was in Fort Knox on Christmas of 1945 and New Year's. And I did that for about a month. And my grandmother died in January, so I got a pass and came home. And she was in Finley, so I went to the funeral and had a few days at home, so this was nice, you know. I went back, and another fellow and I were called in. They saw in my papers that I was an artist. So they wanted some various posters made, training posters and visual aids for these fellows going through the separation center. So they set us up with a little office and some equipment. And so we were doing these posters. And so I guess that happened at the time my grandmother died, because I was in service like 6 weeks and I got corporal, they call it technical corporal classification. So I came back and went back to the design department. I was already a corporal, you know, this was something. So this fellow had been in for all those years and hadn't had anything. So anyway, we did that until the latter part of February. There a couple of months, and then they closed that separation center, and we moved back to Atterbury, and they had a separation center there, and we set up an additional separation center. The whole personnel, the whole thing moved, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it was a pretty big operation. So I was there until, I guess, May or early June, I guess early June, and sort of dwindled down by that time.
Mm-hmm.
Number of people coming, soldiers coming through for separation. And so I went for military basic training. I hadn't had that. Neither had a lot of the others. So I had basic training and was put in a holding company for some time. While I was in basic training, I painted all the helmet liners with all of the military ranks and names, made maps and this sort of thing, you know. And then I was put into a holding company, and I painted all of their signs, and another fellow and I painted the kitchen, and so I had basic training, was put into this holding company, and then I was sent out to Fort Lawton, Washington, and this is a camp that is right on the Sound in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
small camp, and they set up a separation center there for handling military people coming back from the Aleutians and also Japan. And so I carried my the posters along that were left, and so they set up a little office there, and so I was doing things there. And that was in, I guess, September, latter part of September. And so we got into early November, or into November, and I was still drafted, and so there were several of us them that were also similar situation as I was, and we were separated out there in Fort Lawton, and I was in service, oh, like, I don't know, 11 days short of a year. Mm-hmm. But it was quite an experience, and it was, I went in service, I thought, well, you know, it's going to be a waste of time. It really wasn't. Mm-hmm. Made some interesting friends, and learned a lot, and did a lot of things, and I was just here in the States, but I was many places in the States, different camps, going from Camp Lee, Virginia, out to Seattle by train. We had a sleeper and had all of the best we could have, you know. Mm. Beautiful ride from Chicago on out. I don't know whether you've ever taken it or not. But so that was quite a thing. So I, at that time, then I came back home and I had wanted to go to art school. I thought, well, you know, I've got some credit now. And, well, they were in dire need of help. So I went back to design. I should have gone...
At Ford.
At Ford. Mm-hmm. I suppose I should have gone to art school at that time, but didn't.
Who asked you to come back, do you remember?
Well, I went in to talk with them. I think I mentioned this maybe to you before. And,
the administrative person came over from GM?
No, he had come, he was a designer. He'd been in Paris, and the GM, he came to Ford. You interviewed him. He was with, he was there when Gregory came back. Hibbard.
Tom Hibbard.
Tom Hibbard.
Yes.
And there must have been a meeting concerning, of course, the 49 Ford, which the vehicle that, mm-hmm. the model that became the 49 Ford had been developed, of course, by that time and had been, was sold just at that time.
Sold to management.
To management. And I don't know what the circumstances were relative to the presentation of that model and meetings about it, but I went in Hibbard's office to talk with him, and he was either on the phone or he got a phone call. I suppose he got a phone call while I was there, and from the conversation it was obvious that he was talking with Gregory, and there apparently had been a meeting that Gregory was not at, and he was asking Hibbard about the meeting, and Hibbard was saying, oh, the meeting went fine and everything's all right. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously it wasn't, you know.
Yeah, for Gregory, that is.
For Gregory. So I went back, I took the time off that I had, which was maybe 6 weeks, and I went back into design in January of 47. And of course, by that time, I had hired in there three times. Original time in April of 41, I hired back in May of 45, and this is the third time in January of 47. And I wanted to be on the board, so they put me on the board, and I was doing various design work. I was in the Lincoln group working on the Cosmopolitan.
But could you explain what you mean by, that's a very common term, that being on the board?
Well, doing design work rather than modeling.
Right, uh-huh.
And
sketches, renderings,
and at that particular time, the designer would do an initial layout of whatever he was designing. And I know that I was working on the steering wheel for the for the Lincoln, and the ornament in the center. Mm-hmm. And I know I did various research on that and some sketches, and I did a drawing of that. I really can't say without looking at the catalog whether that's the one that was used or not. I presume it may have been. So I was in there for, oh, I don't know, a few weeks. And John Nager...
This was still at the Green Lab.
Yes, this was at the north end of the building by that time.
Mm-hmm.
North, east. And John Nager, they set up studios, and John Nager had the Mercury Studio. And he was in dire need of help. So he asked, and they asked, if I would go over there and be the head modeler. So I presume that maybe they gave me some additional money to do this. I don't know.
At least enough incentive.
Classification. There was, must have been some incentive. Mm-hmm. So I went over and became the head modeler. And during that period of time, it was when this article came out. I think I had shown you the article. They came in from Science Illustrated magazine, current magazine at that time, and did an article on the birth of a 1949 car, and it was the story of the Mercury.
Uh-huh. Which you and John were working on.
Yes. Well, really, it was all developed. It was finished.
Oh, was it?
I didn't have anything to do with it, uh-huh. But I was given credit here as being the head modeler, and they had these rather nice pictures, and they sent me an enlargement of one of these, and you know, a nice byline there. Anyway,
yeah, that's very good.
So what we were really working on was some minor changes for the 50s and a more extensive changes for the 51.
Mm-hmm. Mercury.
So I was in there for a while, and of course during this period of time they brought in some of the GM group, I think Oswald, and he brought in a fellow by the name of Snyder, who became the, Oswald became the, I guess, chief body engineer. Mm-hmm. Or he was over design, which they called styling at that time, and body engineering. Mm-hmm. And they brought in Snyder, head of design, and they brought in, you had mentioned the body engineer.
Henry Greeby
as the body engineer. Mm-hmm. And of course, Ljunggren had been brought in, and he's the one that brought Oswald in. And Ljunggren also brought McPherson in. They brought in Ljunggren, I had always been told, to do an automatic transmission for Ford. They brought in Greeby for chassis. They brought in, McPherson for chassis and Greeby for body. Mm-hmm. Oswald to head up those operations, and Snyder, who had been the head of the Oldsmobile studio, of course, Ljunggren and Oswald both came from Oldsmobile to head up these operations. Mm-hmm. So Snyder brought in Bordenay and Della Rosa, and a few others. They had a mass invasion. Brought in the Stobar brothers.
Right.
They brought in an engineer for design. And of course, they had been seeped in the development with the use of the Norton equipment. And the bridges to them were quite foreign, and they didn't mean anything to them.
What was foreign?
The bridges.
Yeah, I see.
And the use of bridges for developing the models, controlling the models.
Right.
And I remember one incident where this engineer came in. I cannot have to think of how to think of his name. Came in the Mercury studio and looked around and walked over the bridge and gave it a kick and walked out. Well, that winter, which I guess would have been the winter of 47, mm-hmm. They took out the bridges. They took them all out.
Oh, really?
And they parked them over there outside the airframe building. They stood out there all that winter.
The winter of what?
47.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
what
in
did they use in its place? The scales and the angles?
Yeah, they had, Ford had some angles, and they may have bought some more, but they never got the Norton equipment. Hmm. It might be that they left one or two bridges also. But
did you ever question anyone as to why this decision was made?
Well, yeah, it was quite clear. They didn't, this fellow in charge of, became in charge of the body drafting, mm-hmm. and he wanted to use templates instead of points. Well, of course, we had used some templates, but we tended to use points and sweeps and curves. And
to make the initial contour.
Yes, the drafts from the model, and of course the model was made that way too.
It wasn't, B.Y. Talberg wasn't still in there, was he, at that point?
No, he hadn't come at that time, as I remember.
Yeah.
But, of course, Rigetko was in charge of drafting, and they put this fellow over Rigetko. Mm. Of course, there was a lot of vociferous
opposition
to this. But, anyway, it happened. So, then they broke up the studios. And they decided they would set it up more on some of the order of GM, where they did the body development in one body development studio at that time. Mm-hmm. And so they set up a studio for that. So I went back, at that time I went back with Wagner, and Wagner had truck and tractor. And so I developed with him and with, you know, the people there, what was the first new Ford tractor. Previous to that time, Ford Ferguson tractor had been the model in production, and Ferguson, of course, left Ford and sued, and Ford and Ferguson both continued to build the same design. And Ford, during 45, when I went back from Willow Run, they were working on a new tractor and decided, well, it's not a good idea because that's like admitting that we were wrong. So they kept the design. But in 48, they decided they should come out with a new design. So that's when we, and of course, by then they had acquired services again once more as a consultant of Walker, I believe.
George Walker.
Anyway, the spinner came out on this tractor. So if you see an old tractor with very nice flowing form and a spinner up front, that was one I developed.
Oh.
And I see them all over, you know. Mm-hmm. All over. They're still using them.
Oh, yes. We have them at the village.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
the 8N or the 9N, which one was it?
I won't say. I'm not sure what they were called anymore. So I was there and developed that. And then we started working on a replacement for the 48 truck and facelifts for that truck. And also Wagner had, or acquired at that time, international operations. And
international design operations?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We did, I think I mentioned also to you that we did this Taunus, and at that time when they would have something of that nature, why, they would give all the designers in the building an opportunity to make a design for this project. Mm-hmm. So they would get all these sketches, illustrations, and they would pick out a couple, or one really, they'd choose one out of the group. And they had on this Ford Taunus that came out in, I think, maybe something like 55. And this would, of course, have been like 1950. Well, there's one thing I guess I should say in there about that time. This was when Dick Khalil was still there. Mm-hmm. And this must have been...
Spell his last name, could you?
I think I might probably have to look that up. Well, C-A-L...
C-A-L-E-A-L.
C-A-L-E-A-L.
Yeah.
Right. And he was doing accessories. And so I was asked to do some work for him, which I did, and he liked my work. Well, shortly after that, he left and went to Chrysler. And he wanted me to go to Chrysler. And this was in 1949. And so I went over for an interview, and they wouldn't give me what I said I wanted. And they kept hesitating on it. And, of course, they found out about this at Ford. So one day I was called into the office, and during this period of time, Bordenay was an administrator. At that particular moment, they didn't. They had let Snyder go, and Bordenay was put in charge of running the operation, but not as a head, but as an administrator. And they hadn't chosen somebody to replace Snyder yet. And I was called into the office, and of course Bordenay was there, and Wagner, and all of the others, including all of the other heads of the various studios. The other name I was searching for was Bob McGuire. But anyway...
Was he, at that time, was he head of the Ford studio?
I think so. That's right. Yes. I always had a rather high regard for him. He was very independent from the others and worked quite differently than the others. But he was a good artist and a good designer and did some very fine work.
In all the interviews I've had, he's universally regarded as a superior.
Yes, he stood out from the whole group. Well, the gist of the meeting was that they would give me, I can't remember, either 23 or 25% increase and position improvement if I would stay. Well, I agreed to stay. And approximately a week afterwards, Chrysler came through with the same offer, you know, with what I wanted.
They'd heard about it then.
I don't know. I think Khalil was working on them, and eventually they came through. Well, so what should I do? Well, of course, I stayed at Ford. Ford had always been good to me. So, well, this one of the early things that happened that of significance was this Taunus German Ford model.
Yeah, how would that come about? There'd been a pre-war Taunus, had there not?
Yes, and I had shown you that photograph that was published in the paper that said that E.T. Gregory had designed it. And, well, I had asked Wagner about that. I said, do you think we'll be doing a new German Ford? No, their economy is so poor, they're not able to do anything. Well, it wasn't about... 2 months from then, why we were working on this Taunus model. So we had two armatures built up for it. And a fellow by the name of Dahlberg, W.P. Dahlberg, was in charge of his international group, and a fellow by the name of Bob Temple was in charge of the truck group. Well, Dahlberg, D-A-H-L-B-E-R-G, he's one of the names I'll give you for an interview. You definitely need to interview him. The designs that were done by Dahlberg and his group and Wagner influence were not chosen. They chose somebody else's design. And so we started working on that. But we had a second model, and Wagner said, well, let's start a second model too. So we took one that he preferred of Dahlberg's designs, and we started it. Well, as time went on, it became the preferred model, and we stopped the first one and finished the Dahlberg model, and it came up to the final week, and it was supposed to be ready on a Friday to prepare for casting. Well, I think it was on a Thursday. this time Walker was back in as consultant, and he came in and he said that we've got to have a spinner on this. We can't send it out without a spinner because Ford products, Fords have spinners. Anything with Ford name. So we started making a change. So we worked on it on part of Thursday and Friday, and I guess finished it like Saturday noon, and so they started to make their cast. And so the Thomas model was cast in plaster and was shipped out and was developed. Final development of that, I think, was done by Chasson, with some work being done in Germany, by a small group, some ornamentation, this sort of thing.
Final. What was that work?
Chasson?
Yeah.
You want me to spell that one?
Please, yeah.
Well, that one's gotten quite a bit of publicity here recently because Chasson is going to do the sports model that's
for
coming
Ford,
out.
For Ford?
Yeah. I'll have to look this up, but it's, I think it's Chasson, something like this. They're in Paris,
and they were
and they're a body engineering design, and they build bodies also. They're still in operation today. Well, anyway, the vehicle was completed over there and went into production with some help from a small group in Cologne.
This was the immediate post-war Thomas.
Yes, and it was. They had two models. They had a so-called 12M and 15M, mm-hmm. and those were designations of engine displacement. One, which was approximately 1,200 cubic centimeters. The other was 1,500. And
what year was this again?
Well, we did the model in I think in 1950. And the next model of significance, well, we worked on the various.
Excuse me, could I interrupt you for a moment, please, for completeness sake? Could you describe briefly the process of making that model? What were the steps involved? The fabrication.
Steps were involved. At that time, I believe we had switched over to 3/8 scale models. When I first started Ford, we were using 4/4 scale, but General Motors used 3/8, so we were following General Motors' pattern.
Yeah.
So they had new tables made, and we had cast aluminum tables with cast aluminum legs, which were cast, I believe, down to Rouge. Machine down there.
Had the bridges come back in?
Well, they had. Oh, yeah. By that time, the bridges were all back.
Exactly.
Of course, they had wintered over there, and so they weren't in quite as good a condition.
Mm-hmm.
But they had scale model bridges made also. Yes. This may be what you're getting. I don't
know. Yes, right.
But so we had a bridge, and we had scale pointers, and to dimension off the bridge onto the model. Bridge had every 5 inches a piece of metal attached to the bridge, so you could lay your scale on that. You could get points every 5 inches, or you could build up from that with spacers to get other points. Of course, this would slide down straight edges along the side of the model on the table, so you could go fore and aft. You could use balance out sweeps like on the roof and the boat deck and so forth. So a very useful tool. An armature or buck was built out of wood wheels. It was like a box, a plywood box that had slats on it that really not different from what the old system for plastering was, or these battens, except these had inverted sections to help hold the clay on, and you'd build the models up with clay and use templates and points, and of course you had a drawing to begin with. You had an illustration. The designer would lay this out to the scale that you were building the model in a side elevation, so you had a center line and you had maybe a front and rear view least would show a cross section through the body, so you had a glass plane, and maybe one across the hood and one across the rear deck. So at least you had something to start with. The rest of cars was sculpturing, forming.
With clay.
Of course, there's always a lot of input, always a lot of new sketches that come along. So the models evolve as they develop.
When would you come to the casting?
Well, when it was completed and shown to the various people that had to pass on it and accepted finally.
You have miniature accessories and
yes,
painted.
Of course, we had play models weren't painted.
Oh, they weren't.
At least not in that, not those.
That
on that period, not for the scale models. We had an extrusion machine, of course, so we would extrude moldings as necessary, and it could be that grill members, headlights, taillights, some of the details might have been metal, either brass plated or aluminum polished. Bumpers probably were that way, and bumpers were rather simple in those days. So they had some bright metal on them, and the rest of them, the clay color. In the window areas, you would maybe paint black, or you'd cut out a plastic black or dark brown plastic pieces to represent the glass area. So they looked rather rather good in clay, not as good as they had been painted. But at that, then to cast them, you would strip off all of these loose items. And at that time, they were making plaster casts, so they would make a piece mold of maybe five different pieces, and at least I suppose five. One of the top roof windshield backlight, deck, and hood. One for each size, so that makes three, and one front and one rear.
Five major components,
and then they would have a ring cast, a complete cast of that whole thing to hold them together. So it would get to be a pretty heavy thing.
Would you put would you put iron members through it to give it stability?
The cast?
Yes.
The mold?
Plaster.
The plaster mold, not well. They might have on the ring the one that held them all together. The others were, they would use sisal or sisal, depending on how you pronounce it, and cheesecloth.
Oh, okay.
As a binder in the plaster.
Mm-hmm.
And those individual molds were made to be somewhat light and simple, so that when they made the ring mold, why, they would all fit into that.
Mm-hmm.
You could take the ring mold off, mm-hmm. and then you would take the others off one at a time. But in that fashion, why, they would make a mold and then a plaster cast, and that cast was painted and very highly finished. And I had those photographs which I had shown you of it. It was painted a sort of a dark red and black roof, I think. Of course, in that case, all of the bright metal parts were bright metal. It was a nice little model. I presume it had glass in the windows, glass or plastic.
These would be 3/8 scale.
These were the 3/8 scale model. That was photographed and packed into a box. It was held down with bolts, but it was held down on foam or foam rubber. And rubber was put in around it and closed up and was shipped out. And
this
would have been, I guess, 1950.
This was the product of the mold, of the plaster mold.
That's correct. Uh-huh. Finished cast of the model. Well, it must have been the next year that we did the French Ford. Could have been 51.
Vidette.
And
had that come out of a rejected?
No, I think I had mentioned that to you. If you want to push your button, I'll bring some foot.
We're talking about talking about the proposed post World War II Ford small car.
Yes, we got this project to do the French Ford, the Vedette, and the first post-war French Ford evolved out of a small Ford that was designed here by the design department and was intended to use the Ford 60 engine, which I believe actually was developed in Europe for European production initially. But anyway, they had a larger version of a very similar design for the regular size Ford. And they decided by the time that 49 was going to roll around that it was getting rather aged and they needed something new, something fresh for the Ford, and something that would be more dramatic. So what became the 49 Ford was developed. What was the regular size Ford became the Mercury. What had been developed as the small Mercury became the small Lincoln, and what was developed as a small Lincoln became the Cosmopolitan, and what was developed as a large Lincoln never made it. Mm-hmm. It was really a larger version of the Cosmopolitan, mm-hmm. longer wheelbase. But they had also developed a small Ford to use the Ford 60 engine. And that one, that design, the tools, they had the tools made, was given to Ford France, and they produced the first post-war Ford Vedette. And that really was what was designed here as the small Ford. So the one, yeah.
There had been a change of part about a small post-war,
yes,
Ford.
Yes, right. Initially, when we first got into the war, there was some feeling that by the time we were through the war, resources would be all expended, and that it would be an essential that we would have to have a very frugal car. They worked on something like a Jeep,
mm-hmm.
Except as a sedan.
Civilian Jeep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And later on, that was their initial start. That's what they even started that before I went to the airframe.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, then they started designing and working on this series of vehicles, these two-size Fords and the Cosmopolitan designs. And that evolved, as I mentioned, the small Ford went to France, the larger Ford became the Mercury, and with a different grill.
Mm-hmm.
Mercury, what they did was to design that rather pleasing grill, actually. It was focal point on the front end. It was quite nice.
Someone decided that the small car was not for Ford, and they jettisoned
not
that.
Not necessary. I think, as we saw later, it was probably Henry Ford himself that made this decision.
Henry Ford II.
So, anyway, along came this Vedette project,
mm-hmm.
and again, they had all the designers in the building work on this. Of course, by that time, they were back to studios. They had a Ford studio, which McGuire headed, as you had mentioned. They had maybe a Lincoln Mercury. I'm not sure whether it was two studios or not. I think Della Rosa was in that at that time.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's right. They had a Mercury studio, which Della Rosa may have been in. They had a Lincoln studio, which Bill Schmidt was in.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a body development studio, which was at, for some period of time, was headed by
designer or engineer?
Yeah, give me a second on that one. Headed by Duncan McCrae. Of course, Duncan McCrae had been in and out. Duncan McCrae was at Ford Design when I hired in, and then he left and went to various places, and then came back, and they put him in charge of this body development studio. And he was pretty good. He was I would consider him certainly a better than average designer, and he understood design quite thoroughly. And of course, they had the tractor and international studio, which studio that Wagner had, and I was Wagner's head modeler. And so we did a variety of things. Of course, during this same period of time, the 53 products were being developed, but I really didn't work on them. So I'm familiar with their development, but I personally didn't have any work on them.
The Vedette was rather a success, was it not?
Well, French Ford company came out with this Vedette, and it made quite a splash. So did the Taunus.
Yeah.
The Taunus, and I have an article that was in the English Motor Magazine, written by, and I had to look that up, a famous English automobile news columnist, very well known. Anyway, he gave the Ford Taunus credit for establishing a post-war design line.
Mm-hmm.
Quite interesting, you know.
And more or less true.
Yeah, I think it was.
So very clean lines, very pleasant. So.
The Vedette was not in production very long when Ford of France was sold to Simca. But of course, Simca built that car for a good 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was very popular, really, in this design. Well, we did what became the 53 Ford truck and the 54. The 54 facelift, which was basically a grill and some ornamentation. And the development of this Vedette, well, the Taunus also, I had taken a major hand in the development of that.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in the Vedette, when a design from an outside studio was chosen and the designer was Boyer, Bill Boyer.
Bill Boyer?
Who also got some credit for the working on the T-Bird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Wagner wouldn't have a thing to do with it. And
why was that?
Well, it didn't come out of his studio, so why should he worry about it?
And you were still working for Bill Wagner?
Yeah, I was working for Bill Wagner. And same, or maybe even more so, with Dahlberg, except Dahlberg had to do some of the detailed design work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it became an orphan, so by this time, of course, I was still designing cars and making layouts, and everything that we would design in the studio in clay, I would follow through and surface layout and make sure that the surface layout was the way the model was intended, and many times have to change the surface layout because it wasn't. And so I had a thorough knowledge of design, so I took it over, and I developed the basic Vedette model,
mm-hmm.
and developed all the forms and curves and highlights. And well, as it went along, Wagner and Dahlberg got involved and became interested. You know, it got an interesting project,
mm-hmm.
so they got back into it. Eventually, when it was finished, Wagner went to France, to Chausson, to view the first prototype, which was this one.
Ah.
That one and the other photograph of the previous model.
Now, can you describe this in visual terms? How would you characterize it?
It was a very honest blow up from the scale model development, except for one case, and that is the line at the bottom of what is known as the rocker panel. The rocker panel, or sill, is the very bottom edge of the sheet metal below the doors. And if you'll notice on any of my models, I had this in a curve. Mm-hmm. And this was in a curve, and it was called rocker panel, I believe, because this came from a coach work term. It was what the coach rocked on their leather straps.
Yeah.
Well, how can you have a rocker panel if it's straight, you know? And it doesn't lend itself to a good, unique form, so I always put a curve in that. So that's the one thing that they didn't pick up on. But other than that, it was very close to the model. It had particularly the upper portion of the body, the green, what they call the greenhouse portion because of all the glass, was very similar in character to the 43 Fords. Mm-hmm. It had a big...
those were the prototypes you had done...
Pardon me, I don't mean 43, I mean 53.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
The new model that came out in 53, the Fords, yeah, and Mercury and Lincolns. It had a curved, angled A-pillar. It had a wraparound backlight and a cap roof. Bright window moldings, sort of jutting headlights. A grille that was rather unique. Had a widow's peak in the top part of the grill with vertical bars, like a large mouth, which came over and circled around lights underneath the headlights, which were the parking lights. The fenders ended in the rear in a vertical taillight, the upper half being the taillight stoplight, the lower half being a backup light. But it was a pleasing small car.
Mm-hmm. And very popular.
And quite popular.
Simca had been at this time, through the efforts of Frank Reith, I believe, had taken over the French Ford operation.
Yes, so. Frank Reith, Jack Reith.
Or Jack Reith.
Jack Reith had headed that operation and brought French Ford company back. And was making considerable progress, and I don't know the circumstances, but I know I heard about the interests of Simca and the efforts that they were going to make to sell this, or that Simca was going to buy it. And happens on lots of things, that when people are on the inside and know a little bit, I bought some stock.
Oh, did
My
you?
Father-in-law, mm-hmm, who always dabbled in stock, I had him buy some, so we bought some for, I don't know, like 7/8 or something, and sold it for, I don't know, 2.5 or something.
Uh-huh.
So it was a good deal. So after that, we did some trucks. And one of the things, well, I had so much control over that model, and I was recognized in the studio, and I guess Wagner recognized what I did. But I hadn't gone to art school, and I wasn't on the board, and I didn't have the opportunities to develop and follow a design through. And there was an opportunity, an opening, I guess. Bob Temple left, and there was an opening for manager of design, and I made an effort to get it. Well, Borden A said, well, what did you ever design? Well, you know, I had designed a lot of things, but never got credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get it. And the one who got it was he was killed in an automobile accident. We talked about that out here at Ypsilanti. So anyway, he came in the studio, and so I made an effort again to get in design. I made several drawings, and maybe I'll get these out and show you, because they were good drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would have been like 51, you know, 52, I guess. It would have been 52 by that time. And by this time, Exter was over at Chrysler.
Virgil Exner Sr.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of made these drawings to, in some respects, to please Exner, at least one of them. and...
Had overtures been made to you, or had you made overtures to them?
Yeah, I went over there and talked with them.
Oh, I see. Okay. And what did he say?
Well, you know, you do a little dickering, and I came back, and I wasn't anxious to leave Ford. I talked to Ford people, and the outcome of it was that, well, by that time, Waterhouse had come in to head Ford.
Charlie Waterhouse.
Charlie Waterhouse.
Administrative
yes,
head.
Right, as an administrative head. And so Waterhouse decided, well, I showed him the drawings, and they were shown to the rest of the people there, and they said, well, of course, by that time they had for some years had an advanced design. At that particular time, Tremulous had it.
So,
well, why'd you put him up in advanced design? So in the fall of 53, I went up to advanced design. I was there through the winter. I was there for 6 months. And that was when I built this model, which I had mentioned to you before. I built that model. I did, you know, I was working on the barn, and I was doing some models also.
These are experimental cars.
Yeah, just advanced designs. Tremulous was doing all of these rocket ships. And I didn't particularly enjoy those. I didn't like those rockets I put on that either, but I did that sort of...
You were asked to do it.
Well, just to make a little more wild design. This is a photograph of the clay.
Yes, right.
But the last thing I did was this model, which I think, you know, was quite unique.
We've got.
Well, I designed it as a go for a Continental.
Oh.
And
which was in the works at that time.
Yeah, everybody was doing one.
Yes.
In the background, you can see a scale model of plaster cast of a Lincoln,
mm-hmm.
which was
era.
Yeah, which was the 53, mm-hmm. and
this is quite advanced for this time.
Well, very advanced. I had the floor down to the ground. I had designed the, and I've got that here too. I had designed the chassis. No, I'm not satisfied just drawing up an exterior.
You get that out. I think we're just at the end of this.
Okay.